Plot twists. We are obsessed with them. In film, life, and love, they turn up everywhere. It's that moment in a story that takes you in an unexpected direction. I'm Tom, super fan of cinema, sport, comedy, and I'm partial to the odd impression. And throughout this series, brought to you by Now and Sky, I'll be interviewing TV and film stars, asking them all about the plot twist moments that define their lives and careers. So expect the unexpected, and hopefully some behind-the-scenes gems you've never heard before. Expect spoilers. My guest this week is one of Hollywood's great anti-heroes, star of Machete, Spy Kids, From Dusk Till Dawn, but has also been in these hit shows like Breaking Bad, Sons of Anarchy, and then the voice credits, Grand Theft Auto, Vice City, Fallout New Vegas, Call of Duty. Danny Trejo is such a recognizable presence in the world of action and entertainment. And I didn't even mention Michael Mann's Heat. That death scene with De Niro, my goodness, is iconic. Michael Mann actually has a whole collection currently on Sky Cinema, including Ferrari's latest film with Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Definitely one to watch. Do go and check that out on Sky Cinema now. But back to Danny Trejo. His life is nothing short of extraordinary. He spent the majority of his 20s in prison in the 1960s, addictions with drugs, where he first took heroin at the age of 12. But he's been sober for over 55 years. It's remarkable. It's a story of redemption. Even with his acting, when he starts in 1985, the type of roles that he was getting, it was always Inmate Number One, which actually is the title of his documentary. But over time, he works his way up the call sheet to where he's number one, like Machete. Extraordinary. Talking about plot twists in his life was fascinating. It was something going into the interview I was just particularly intrigued about, knowing the full extent of his story. And he was in London to visit his restaurant, Trejo's Tacos, which opened recently in Portobello Road in Notting Hill. I guess another plot twist in his life. And I brought his cookbook and his biography with me, and you'll probably hear me reference those during the chat a little bit, some good snippets to pull out. And as it happens, we're both big fans of boxing. And Danny was a boxing champion in prison, almost went pro. Just something else to add to his pretty unique story. So that's where we start. What a joy. The formidable Danny Trejo on Plot Twist. Danny Trejo, it's a pleasure.
Thank you, man. Pleasure's mine.
I was thinking, reading about your story, I was just saying to you before, you've had the most extraordinary life.
Yeah.
It's been pretty wild. And I like to think that life, boxing is a good metaphor for life. I'm a big boxing fan. I know you like your boxing.
Yeah.
And I thought if your life was summarized in 12 rounds, in the early rounds, you took a few knocks. Maybe got knocked down a couple of times. Yeah. But my goodness, in those last few rounds, you've been winning those hard.
First few rounds, I was paid to take a dive. It's kind of growing up in neighborhoods and stuff. You kind of got three strikes against you. So anybody that comes out of a neighborhood without going to jail or going to juvenile hall or getting in trouble, my hats are off to them. You're limited. Now there's a little more room to grow. You know, now there's this, schools are offering a little more. There's just so many kids now. But you've got a little better chance, you know. But still, it's still, you know, still a fight. You know, you're fighting them streets. So if you make it out, man, it's on you. My hat's off to you.
Do you feel like in those early years the odds were stacked against you?
Well, you know what? I stacked them against me. It was kind of like I had two uncles, my Uncle Rudy and my Uncle Gilbert. My Uncle Rudy went to college, and he was only a couple of years older than Gilbert. You know, he tried to help me, but didn't have a lot of time. And Gilbert, who was, weed head, you know, low rider, he's kind of gangster, had all the time in the world. And I think that was the thing that I misunderstood. You know, it's like I'd go to my mom and she'd be on the phone and I would say, "Hey, Mom," and "Shut up, Mom." You know, it's like, and okay. So I'd go to my dad, same thing, you know. I'd go to Gilbert, I'd say, "Hey, Gilbert," and he'd go, "Yeah, hold on. Yeah, what do you want me?" And he would stop what he was doing.
You.
Yeah, and so automatic, you know, as a kid, that's who I gravitated for. And he was, everybody else was construction. So they were all sweaty and greasy and mechanics and stuff. And Gilbert was a drug dealer and armed robber, so he stayed looking like a pimp all the time. it's a work day and you're looking like that. And so, it's what I wanted to do. Press pants with a crease and press shirt with a crease, that's the way I went to school, and that's what I started doing. Gilbert turned me on to grass. I was about 8, gave me a fix of heroin. I was about 12, and then it was downhill ever since. And automatic. I just started, but not in his defense, because he didn't need none. But just that was what he did.
But I think that's understandable in the sense that you're a young lad. He looks the business. He looks cool.
That's it.
Your parents weren't necessarily as attentive as they could have been. So then you gravitate to the cool guy.
Yeah, absolutely. The difference between a work shirt and that nice sweater you're wearing is like, wait a minute, I want to wear that.
I appreciate that.
And you both go to work, So it was like that was it. And a lot of people tried to keep me away from Gilbert because they knew what he was doing. But that's my hero. And he ended up, it's funny because when Michael Mann, famous director.
Oh, yeah.
He did a movie in Folsom Prison called The Jericho Mile. And it was about a runner, right? And in order to do the movie, he had to have some of the inmates. So the African-Americans came out and the American guys came out. And then none of the Mexicans came out. And so he said, what's wrong? Well, in order to get the Mexicans, you have to talk to their union leader. And so he ended up talking to my Uncle Gilbert and Rudy Sal, some other, like 3 or 4 top shot callers. And he made friends with my Uncle Gilbert. He and Michael Mann won't admit it, but he paid my uncle SAG scale all the time that they did that movie,
Wow.
And it was funny, but they became friends, So when I did Heat, he mistook me. He said, hey, Gilbert. He said, no, I'm Danny.
Yeah.
Gilbert said, oh, man, what happened? Gilbert had overdosed and died, and we talked. And in the movie Heat, Michael Mann changed the script 3 different times because he kept giving me different names. If they change a name, they have to change the whole. So he kept changing and then finally, he said, Danny, do you care if I call you Gilbert Trejo? Every time I look at you, I think of Gilbert. Now, so my family, it was all like paid homage to my Uncle Gilbert in the movie Heat because it says Gilbert Trejo played by Danny Trejo.
That's so pretty cool.
So it was really cool of him.
That is really cool. This show's called Plot Twist.
Yeah.
And it's all about unexpected moments in our lives. Yeah. You've had a few unexpected moments in your life. Yeah. If you could narrow it down to the one ultimate plot twist for Danny Trejo, what might that be?
The biggest change in my life came in Soledad in 1968 when me, Ray Pacheco, and Henry Quijada, I can say their names, they both passed away in robberies. Wait, passed away, that's not in a robbery. I mean, they both shot in robberies. You don't pass away, we went to the hole in a riot. And I think that was the change that said, I'm going to go to the gas chamber if I don't stop. And I think that was where I asked God, just, let me die with dignity and I'll say your name every day and I'll do whatever I can for my fellow man. I said my fellow inmate, because I never thought I was getting out of prison anyway. And it's funny, but, when I went to board the next year, that was 68, I got out of the hole in July. And I remember Mad Dog Madden, parole officer, said, Trejo, we're getting sick of you. I remember, that's a nice way to start a conversation. He said, we're kicking you out of here, man. Bring us back a life sentence. I'll never forget that. Just look me right in the face and bring us back a life sentence because they had, no hope of me staying out, because that's what I do. And I got out. I dedicated my life to helping other people. And it's funny, but I kept getting paid, but in God's time. It wasn't like I don't do something and then, oh, yeah, it's my payment. No, it's like I helped And that's what I did. I just started helping people.
There was a purpose to help.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But it made me feel good. That was the thing. It's like, wow, you know, that was good. I remember the first gift I got was a fake suede leather jacket, double-breasted fingertip, stylish in 69, you know. And it was given to me by this old guy. I used to take out his trash because he had a crippling arthritis in his hands and he couldn't take out his trash can, so I'd take them out for him. And that's what I started doing, was taking out the old people. He gave me that jacket, and I remember asking my mom. It was like, okay, I got you. You know, it's like, in your time, you know, all I've been doing is receiving his gifts the rest, you know, these last 50 years that I've been out of the pen, you know, and hasn't stopped. Mario Castillo, my assistant, right? I met him in San Quentin in 1991. We did a movie called Blood In, Blood Out. Mm. And I met Mario and we talked. And yeah, we told him about staying clean, staying sober, getting out of prison. And I run into him about 8 years later, right? He's in a recovery center and he's doing good. And he became a counselor for needle exchange, you know, for dope fiends, helping dope fiends. And we were doing really good. And then he needed a liver transplant. You know, he died and came back to life. I mean, those guys that are dead on the table. And then, yeah, so I used to call him, hey, if you're up there, man, put in a good word, but if you're down there, don't tell that guy you know me, okay? So we like laughing. He'd always have me on speakers so I could hear the nurses laughing. Yeah. And so when he came out, he was destitute. I mean, he broke. It was not like had the best insurance or none of that. No, liver transplant. So I said, well, you know what? Move in. I got an extra room, man, to answer my phone. And so that was like 20 years ago. And 9.5 years ago, he saved my son's life. You know, my son was pretty heavy on drugs. I was in Germany, and I called, and I talked to Mishko, who's living here now. I got to get a hold of him. And he said, hey, Gilbert's in trouble, man. He was, you know, my son got credit cards and stupid dad, you know, I don't say, here's some more money. I don't, you know, he was dying. And Mario, I got him. I called him, kicked in the door of a crack house, pulled my son out, brought him. When I called, said, I got him, don't I? I got him here. And I came home in 2 days and we took him to rehab. And my son just became a director. He's got almost 10 years clean, you know, so.
Good for him.
So God will pay you, you just don't know when.
Yeah, right.
And so every time I look at him, it's like, I can't get mad at Mario, you know.
Before that, the riot in the prison, do you think anyone, I mean, take you now, for example, and the life that you live and the drug counselor and all the support, the service you've given to others, could you have had a conversation to persuade that younger version of yourself to get clean and to live a better life? Or did you need something extreme to make you realize what was happening?
I think you just hit on it. I needed something extreme, you know, to let me know that, hey, wait a minute. You know, it was funny. It was like all my life, everybody said, you have a lot of potential.
I get the same.
Okay, third grade Mrs. Finley, fourth grade teacher. Yeah. Danny, you have a lot of potential. You know, and vice principal, same thing. But I remember when I was in the hole, what happened to all that potential? You know what I mean? Like, so I don't think anything could have changed the way it was going. Mm. You know, because from where I came from, I remember when, like, marijuana, you would just throw seeds in a dripping faucet outside in the sunlight. And in a couple of months, you'd have a nice marijuana plant. They were all over. It wasn't like bad. You were just smoking, you know, and it became bad, you know, and it became, it's funny. I mean, I know guys that went to prison for possession of marijuana, you know what I mean? And it wasn't like I was doing wrong. I was just getting caught.
Yeah.
You know, and got to figure a way not to get caught. And then with the whole incident, it was like, well, they might send me to the gas chamber. You know,
then it got real.
Yeah, it all got real. Perfect. And so when I made that promise, I remembered it. I've never forgotten it. You know, it's like, wait a minute, man. I will say your name every day, and I'll do whatever I can for my fellow man. Honestly, God, I don't think a day goes by that I don't do something, even if it's just a phone call to somebody that's struggling, you know, just like right
help
now.
Help somebody else out.
You know.
Yeah.
There's a couple of people I got to call, you know.
But something I noticed in the book, it's an amazing book of yours, talking about your story, and particularly, I think, in the 60s, where you spent more time probably in jail than out.
Yeah. Donald Logue, my best friend, he helped me write this book. God, great guy. It's funny, when I met Donald, I met him at the Hollywood Drug and Alcohol Center at 12 o'clock at night. I was going to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I met skinny little kid, red hair, from Ireland. That's where he was from, right? And I says, how you doing? He goes, the fuck do you care?
Wow.
I looked at him, and I don't look like the guy you want to say that to.
Yeah.
And I said, kill this kid, what the hell is wrong? And I looked at him and I said, nah, you know, you have a nice night. And I walked away, you know. And I said, well, this kid's got a problem. 8 years later, I'm on a movie called Reindeer Games.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Vin Diesel was actually cast for this part. He was doing a friend a favor. He was actually, might miss the Fast and the Furious. They were cast.
Yeah.
And I said, what are you doing? Because he wasn't right for the part. This was like a goofy, you know, kind of
guy,
somebody that could act. Oh, God. You know, and he was frustrated, what's wrong? And he's, man, you know, I got this big movie. I said, well, you're not on camera yet. So if you're going to split, you better tell him right now that you're leaving, because once you're on camera, then you can't go. Then it's on you. Right now, it's on them. And so then the next morning, we went to pick him up, and he says, hey, I'm gone, Dan. I told him, good, get out of here. You ain't right for the part anyway. And so who they brought up was Donald Logue. And we started talking. We became like the best of friends.
Wow.
You know, and he was going through a bunch of stuff with his ex, old lady. And I said, you know, come on, stay, we'll hang together. We just hung together. So
then you got your book together.
That stuff, you know. And best friends. And then so everybody had been telling me to write a book. I could never get people not to use, you know, infamous. And so, and Donald, we did a couple of chapters, and then I gave it to Maeve, my kid's mom's. Mm. And she said, now that's like talking to you. You know, this is like, so that's, we ended up doing the book, you know.
It's a great book.
To Gloria, she like, yeah, this is good. You
know? It's the stories are incredible. And one thing I picked up in the 60s, where you were probably in jail more than you were out, you mentioned about how you felt about yourself. There was a lot of self-loathing. There was a lot of hatred towards yourself. At what point did that change and you start feeling mentally fresh and good in yourself?
I think that was one of the things that, when I was in the hole, and when you start helping people, you start thinking better about yourself. You know, it's like when somebody's, man, thank you. When somebody, mom, is in tears saying, thank you so much for helping, but, you know, you're like, wow, you know.
It's powerful.
It's almost like godsend, you know. And that's when you really, really start, you know, when you talk to a class and the teacher tells you, they listen. They don't usually listen, you know. And and it's such a great feeling when you walk into a packed auditorium of high school kids and they're all screaming and yelling, and you walk out on stage and they're quiet. Boom, just gets quiet. Teachers get scared. You're like, oh, something. And that's not me. It's so funny because, oh, God, you're so. No, it's not me. It's the guy from Spy Kids, the guy from Heat, the guy from. That's who they want to hear. And I'm under no pretense, you know, that the minute that they see me, that's what they think about, you know, those guys. So,
but even in the 70s, when you started doing that, I think I got the sense from your book that because you'd been incarcerated, because of the way you looked, the way you presented yourself, there was intrigue. And that's why they listen to you. Whereas a normal teacher would probably look like me. They'd be like, they'd be chatting amongst themselves. They wouldn't listen.
You know, it's so funny. I got to tell you something. I started selling tools, right? I was selling tools, and I got a suit and a sport coat, and I was going to these mechanic shops. And, hey, would you like to buy this tool? Nah, nah, get out of here, get out of here. Yeah, nah, nah, nah. I mean, damn, man. So, shit, one day I had pressed Levi's and T-shirt and a big leather jacket, long leather jacket, you know, and I went and I parked in back and I opened my trunk. This guy said, what do you got? I got some tools. Oh, yeah, oh, how much are these? All of a sudden they were intrigued because they thought they were going to get a great deal because they were like stolen or something. They're all legal tools, right? I was getting more for them. You know, but people, you know, yeah, give me that one. And so I remember when I went back to the office and I told Sam, he's, where the receiver? He said, I don't know. I what did you do? I sold him out of the trunk. And he's like, illegal? Yeah. He laughed. He said, well, so then we just started making receipts, you know. So, legal.
Yeah.
You gotta like stretch it a little, you know. But so it's like my past has always helped me, you know, it's always helped me. It's always, and it's funny, I've learned a way to use it positively, you know, instead of negatively. I can still bring that guy out and threaten to kill you, you know, but I don't need to most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned about the influence of your uncle Gilbert and your parents as well. Do you feel that if you'd had, you said like, for example, you didn't remember your parents saying, I love you, or giving you a hug. Do you think if they had done that, if they'd been a bit more closer to you, maybe things would have been different?
You know what? Everybody asked me that. And I don't know. I don't know if it was something in me that gravitated toward, who was it? Dolly, oh God, you're going to identify with Dolly Parton. What the hell is wrong with you? I just realized that I love her. But she had a song about no matter what her mother did, the lights of honky-tonks called her. You know, she loved the, what'd she call them? City painting up women or something like that. She just loved that style. And I think that was part of me. You know, I love the streets. I love that music. Now, maybe if I'd never heard it or I ever, you know, maybe, you know, but that's not the way that it was supposed to be. And then maybe this, I was supposed to go through what I went through to be where I'm at, to be able to just get a kid. Come on, And I'm not, much time, nothing like that. I'm just kids that are into what I was into, see me, oh man. And it's like, come on, hang with me. Don't use, okay, I won't. And all the time they're with me, they're not using drugs, we're clean. And so if you can do that long enough, then it becomes a habit. You know, not using drugs becomes a habit. You know, it's just like using drugs becomes a habit, you know.
I think my hero is Muhammad Ali. And he said, service to others is your rent for your time on earth.
Absolutely.
I thought that, and that's a good summary of your life.
Absolutely.
In many ways.
Yeah, service, that's what it's all about. I mean, that's basically, it's like Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous. It's like, that's what I do, service. You know, being of service. And when some kid comes trying to stay clean, okay, well, let's go help this guy. And we go help some lady fix her yard or whatever. It's like all of a sudden they're working, not getting paid, and feeling great about themselves. You know, to where before, I mean, I was talking in a class and I said, right now, all of you kids, if the teacher says, hey, take out that wastebasket, the first thing you're going to say is, okay, can I get extra credit? You know, it's like, I want to get paid. So it's like when you're able to just get that basket and empty it and not worry about it, it's like, then you'll get paid. And it's like, that's the way that I've always felt. And you don't, wait a minute, I don't got to worry about payment. He'll take care of that. And it's worked. It's worked. I got three, four great kids, you know, all working. They all went through all their bids, all their drugs, all that came out. All right, you know, and that's, that means that they'll be better, you know, and they'll know how to deal with this stuff, you know, because it's a plague. I mean, right now, it's just, it's an unbelievable plague that we've got. And we keep legalizing more and more. And wait a minute, man. It's like, you know, that's the way every society is falling between alcohol and drugs. And politically, right now, there's other countries just running the UK, running America, just going, you know, passing drugs. You know. Now it's fentanyl. You know.
It's tough. Talking of plot twists, I mean, there's Trejo's Tacos.
I know.
Which is, I mean, congratulations. You have a new restaurant in Portobello Road. In
I love it.
That's cool.
Said, you know what? Everybody that I have said, yeah, I'm doing this restaurant in Portobello. But what? They can't believe it that we're doing it. And it's a beautiful restaurant. And I'm inviting everybody there. You know what I mean? And I'll be there. And it's like just a great, great place. But everything good that has happened to me has happened as a direct result of helping someone else. Honestly, God, everything. I started a gardening business when I first came out of prison. Me and a kid named Danny Levitoff, right? Danny Levitoff, great little white kid, just great, right? And we're in this program called RIF, Recovery, Independence, and Freedom. And I was kind of like helping my friend Frank Russo because he was like the leader of the program, you know? And the kids all like, they just come out of prison. And so Danny had a, he was a armed robber. He was like 16, 17 years old, 18 years old. And he was robbing jack-in-the-boxes. And he robbed one, and then he was walking down Ventura Boulevard, which is a huge boulevard, right? And he, all of a sudden, all these cops surrounded him because he stashed his gun, but he didn't take off the ski mask. So he was walking, he was loaded to walk down. And so anyway, but he was from money. His mom and dad had money. So, you know, I mean, that's the name of the game. You got money, you don't go to jail. And so he was sentenced to RIF, which is in, you know, Recovery, Independence, and Freedom. And that's where I met him. And we started talking. And I met this little girl, Debbie. We talked, and she gave me a 1959 Chevy that she had, right? And so me and Danny used that to go, you know, hustle up gardening. You know? So he would go to the door, right? And now, can we do your gardening? Sure. And so, do you have a lawnmower? Yeah. And do you have a wedge? Everything. I mean, we didn't have nothing. And so we would borrow everything and then go to a couple other houses with their equipment when they come back. But that 59 Chevy had that big trunk. So we would load everything in the trunk and go dump it at a Vons, you know, which is low overhead, you know. And so this one lady that used to live in my mom's neighborhood had a beautiful garden. When I left, she had dichondra, which is stupid, right? I mean, dichondra, if a bird walks on dichondra, it kills it, you know. And she had this beautiful fountain in her yard. When I came out of prison, like 5 years, she had this jungle. You know, and I said, Mom, what happened? And she said, because we used to make fun of her, you know, and people would like throw shit on the yard and stuff. And one son died in Vietnam, the other one died in a gang war, and then her husband committed suicide in the bathroom or house. So she turned into like the Vruja. Witch lady, yeah, right? And so we would just go over there, and I just like pull a Ouija and start fixing her yard a little bit. And she would always get a pitcher of lemonade and two glasses and put them outside. And she put on, she had these long gloves because witches can't come out in the day. They'll burn up. So she would like just put them out on the porch for us. And I'd pour a glass and I'd give it to Levitoff and he'd drink it. And I says, you feel like you're turning into a cat? No. Okay. So then we drink. But one of my fantasies in prison was to be like in Las Vegas and order, hey, let me have a lemonade, you know, and have it in those glasses that they have in Vegas that are this big, and clink, clink, and a glass, you know, real crystal, it sounds different than like a tumbler or a tin cup, you know. And I remember that sound, and she had clink, clink. not exactly what I meant, God, but I got you. You know, so we would be drinking that lemonade. And we got her yard looking not bad, and the sprinklers worked, and the fountain worked, and everything. And this guy came over and says, hey, what are you charging the lady? Nothing, she's crazy. We just do it. You know, just come over, I want you to look at my yard. And we went over, and this guy, he's this way. Okay. So we got it up to the end. It's about $35, $40. Now, this is 1970, okay?
That's good money.
Yeah, well, it cost $35 to pass my house now. It cost me $35. So then he goes to his garage. He picks up his garage. He's got all this gardening equipment. He says, look, you can have this gardening equipment. So I love working on my yard, but I had a heart attack. My wife won't let me work anymore. I'll give you this if you do my yard for free. Hey, Mr. Uncle, I won't wash your back home. And so that's we had so much equipment, we went and bought a truck. And we had, about 3 years later when we sold it, we had two trucks. We had like three, four guys working for us. And because he wanted to be a drug counselor, so did I. I wanted to get in. And then from there, we went to work. I went to work at the Narcotics Prevention Project. He went to work at a place in Oxnard that also dealt with drug addicts and everything. It's like, it's just keep getting paid. But in God's time,
right?
You know, and I still work for a place called Western Pacific Med Corp. You know, I still, and Mark Hickman, hey, Big Mark, he's my CEO, and he's, you know, now I do most of the political stuff when they got to go to Washington or they got to,
right,
you know, and I got a book.
You got your Travis Tacker. Have you got a good lemonade in the restaurant?
Hey, we got the best lemonade. and we got Mexican drinks. This one, it's funny. It's like we did this one first, then we did another one, and it's the other one has got the mock, all
the
mock drinks.
Yeah,
the mock cocktails. Yeah. Because, you know, a lot of people, it's funny, since the pandemic, the problem was that a lot of people were staying in during, like, the pandemic. And so they were drinking, you know, put on a lot of weight, and you just started drinking too much. So but they still want to go out and
they
stuff.
Want the experience.
So they just, you know,
yeah,
order a mock cocktail. And it's funny how many people order the mock cocktails in the restaurants. I do.
Yeah, me too.
I got three bottles of tequila in my car. Hey, they're not real. They're not.
Well, Trejo's Tacos, congratulations on that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna throw some names at you, and I want to get your response. But before I do that, I wanted to ask you about a plot twist person,
uh-huh,
an unexpected source of inspiration in your life. Who's the person that comes to mind?
Eddie Bunker was a writer, and we were in prison together in, I think, 1962, but he was the captain's clerk. That's the most powerful inmate in an institution, because he can put a thing in front of the captain and say, sign that. The captain signs it, and all of a sudden, the guard that was messing with you is out in the tower at 6 p.m. to 6 a.m., you know, he's not messing with him. So Eddie Bunker was probably the biggest difference in my life. He's the one that got me into the movies.
Really? Oh, of course, yeah, because you were going to do a bit of boxing coaching, right?
I actually showed up to help some kid, right?
What's this, like 85, roughly?
1985. Right. And I'd been out since 1990, August 23rd, 1969. And this was in 85, when I got on the movies at a runaway train, and I ran into Eddie Bunker. And he said, what are you doing here, Daddy? I said, I'm going to help this kid stay clean, you know, and they're going to give me $50 for acting like a convict. And we both laughed, because we'd been doing that for free all our lives. You know? And he said, are you still boxing? Like, I was a lightweight and welterweight champion of every institution I was in. I said, hell no, I'm 40 years old. And I train. He said, we need somebody to train one of the actors how to box. And I said, what's his pay? And he said, $320 a day.
Wow.
And I said, how bad you want this guy beat up? You know, no, 320, are you kidding me?
That's good money.
Kill him, I mean. And I started training Eric Roberts how to box for the movie Runaway Train. And Eric respected me, and so he would do whatever I told him to do, and the director saw that. Andrei Kajalowski. So it was his first American movie, Runaway Train. And he came over and he says, you be in movie. You fight Eric in movie. And you be my friend. You be my friend in prison is a
It's a red different
flag.
Thing.
Okay.
That's a major red flag.
You hold it. We'll stop and you be, okay? I look. I was stunned that he said that, and then he leaned over, he kissed me on both cheeks, and walked away. Right? I told him, "Look, Eddie, I'm gonna train the kid for the 320, but if I'm gonna be kissing that old man, he better come up with some more money." No, he's European. I don't know. Kiss, you know.
Just the way they are.
But if I would have realized what that man did for me by getting me into SAG, I'd have washed his back. I mean, you know, come on, here, let me scrub that boy. And that was it, you know. And all of a sudden, I knew how to take orders. I knew how to do what somebody asked me to do. And in fact, that movie, I was boxing, right? And so I'm throwing, boom, beautiful punches. And the stunt coordinator came up, and he didn't know how to talk to me because he'd never seen tattoos like mine. And he said, "Look, Dan, you know," he showed me that the difference between a straight punch on camera and a hook, you know, so you want to throw these round punches. And I said, okay. And so I started doing that, and he saw that I followed orders, and he offered me I'm doing a film after this if you want. Yeah, are you kidding? So I just went from movie to movie, and I got my 320, you know. So it was like, just, you know.
But what happens from there is, it's like a Hollywood movie in itself, right?
Yeah.
The story.
I mean,
who you
funny.
Go on to work with is incredible.
And I'm working with John Voight, Eric Roberts, you know what I mean?
Bronson.
The big Bronson. I got to work. The first time I ever had a name, because usually I was a...
Inmate number one.
Bad guy, mean guy, tattooed guy. I was Art Sanella in Death Wish 4 with Charles Bronson. And that was like, he's my hero anyway, you know? And so that was like...
Can you tell me the story? Because you got his respect quite quickly.
Oh, yeah. No, we were working with a guy named Perry Lopez. And Perry Lopez was a gangster. He always played a gangster. And he was like, he was like 80 when we were doing that movie. And he had emphysema real bad. I mean, he couldn't even blow out the candles on a cake. You know what I mean? And so they had to use this thing. But we were doing this thing to where we all came together, and Perry was going to like, okay, let me set this up. And he starts, blah, blah, blah. And one of the kids that was there, young guys, right? He said, "Hey, old man, I don't need no coaching from a old has-been. I went to, you know, Juilliard or somebody." He went to somewhere. I thought they knew each other. And with Joseph, I kind of like, you know, I thought it was, they knew each other. And then Perry tried to explain, no, because we're kind of stagnant. And the guy kind of told him, shut up. And then I realized, wait a minute, he's like disrespecting this guy that can't even breathe, you know. And so I kind of told him, like, hey, look, how would you like to get beat to death? And shut up, you know, you do whatever he says. And I'm just in character. I hate people to stay in character. I'm in character. And so when I turned around, the director and Charles Bronson were right behind me.
And you're probably thinking, okay, like, I've ruined my chances.
Now I'm fired. Yeah. And the directors, we've had a lot of problem with him. I don't think it'd be a problem. And walked away. And then Bronson says, "You're some kind of drug counselor or something, aren't you?" And I'm thinking, yes. Sound a little bit, yes. I like the way you counsel, and walked away, you know. And so then after that, he called us up for another. He called us up for a film that he was doing called Kinjite. Hey, Trejo, blah, 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 blah. And bring your friend George. Because my friend, okay, so got us on another film. So
that's trying to make cool.
And Bronson is so funny. There's a huge golf course in Beverly Hills. And he would go to the golf course in Venice in Santa Monica at 6 a.m. The free golf, he's going, and he would go play there. I just dug him.
Can I throw some names at you? And I just want to get your reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Just like a sentence or a word. Just want to see what you think. What comes to mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Michael Mann.
Great guy. Yeah, great guy. Crazier than a barn owl, but he's like just really, really a nice guy and really knows his stuff and won't say, okay, move on till he's satisfied.
Right.
You know, it's just funny because I did 8 takes one time, and I'm always planning myself on getting it two most. I saw I was getting frustrated, and he goes, hey, De Niro did 11, okay? But De Niro, he'll say, no, let's do another one. He won't stop till he's satisfied.
Right. You know, so. Steven Seagal.
I've worked with Steven about 3 times, and he's cool once you get to know him. He's pretty cool.
Do you think he's a tough guy?
I always like to mention Benny Yukitis around any of those karate guys, or Chuck Norris, you know, because they're like real karate guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, all
with George St. Pierre.
Hollywood. Now, George, no. I actually did a thing with George St. Pierre, and he's beautiful. He's the George St. Pierre will just do them all.
I've got a couple more names. Nicolas Cage.
I love him. Nicolas Cage said I'd be the last one that he wanted to meet in an alley on a set.
Steve Buscemi.
God, I adore him.
He's a good friend of yours, right?
Yes, and he also directed a movie called Animal Factory for me. You know, and it was with Eddie Bunker, and a book that Eddie Bunker wrote. And Steve, I remember I gave it to Steve, and I said, read this or I'll kill you. And it was funny. No, in an interview, he actually said, Daddy gave me this script. We were doing a movie. It was true. And he said, read this or I'll kill you. And the interviewer said, I read it. And then he said, Danny, there's really nothing in here. No, I want you to direct it. He said, oh, okay, fine, I'll direct. So when Steve signed on to direct it, Willem Dafoe signed on to do the lead. So,
oh, wow.
It's a great movie. You know?
That is cool. That's very cool. I mentioned boxing at the beginning.
Yeah.
I read in the book that you were thinking about turning pro.
Yeah.
You wanted to, but you couldn't for 2 years in California because you've been incarcerated.
Yeah, so what I did was I started doing club fights, which are non-sanctioned.
Exhibitions, kind of.
Well, no, they're not exactly exhibitions. They're like in a bar. They'll set up a ring and, you know. And, you know, lightweight. Yeah, okay, I'm 130, you're 160, you know. But it would pay pretty good. And a lot of times guys that are trying to bring, I don't think they do it anymore, but guys that are trying to bring guys up will like, you know, hey, we'll give you an extra 100. Just give me it. I can take a dive. And so it's boxing is pretty regulated, the professional box. The tough parts are the club fights, the down here, those are the ones that are like, you know, don't bet on them.
Yeah, I can imagine. A lot about this episode has been focused around service to others.
Yeah.
For listeners that may be going through a difficult time, what would be your advice?
For me, you know, being in a group like a self-help group, you know, like AA, NA, Cocaine's Anonymous, you know, there's so many of them. It's like just, and to just sit, you don't have to talk, you don't do anything, but just to be around people that are clean, you know, people that are not using drugs. It's like, it's just such a clean feeling, first of all. Then all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, oh, I know, oh, we made friends. And all of a sudden you've got some people that you can call that their first priority isn't what they can get out of you. Do you understand? Drug addicts and people on the street, what can I get out of you? You know what I mean? It's like, what can I do for you? You know, that's the people you want to be around. What can I do for you as long as I don't get you drugs? You know what I mean? You know what I mean? It's like, you can't use me, you know, but I'll do it. You know, I've taken care of people's kids. You know what I mean? I've, you know, here, go to work, man. I got them. You know, And so it's like, that's all we do. We just have, everybody that I break bread with, everybody that has a key to my house, everybody that I consider my friend, if you look in their trunk, they'll have tube socks, they'll have underwear, you know, they'll have jeans, you know, just different stuff. Just to here, take these, you know, it's a jacket, you know, and that's what we do. You know, that's just what we do. That's just what you have to do in order, you know, to live comfortably. You know, I just honestly believe that. And I know some people are, I'm comfortable. Well, you want to get more comfortable, help somebody.
It's been a pleasure having you on this show.
Thank you.
I've really enjoyed talking to you, reading your book and your cookbook and looking at the recipes. It's been a joy.
Hey, I would invite everybody to my restaurant down on Portobello Road. And it's so funny. My son's like, I couldn't remember Portobello. Right? And he says, Dad, think mushrooms. Portobello Road. And
the Beatles.
Yeah, that's, you know, I will get a white suit and walk across that street. and I'll post it. It's been great. I love London anyway. I love London. I love being here. And like I said, me and Ray Liotta had a blast here. You know? Me and my son had a blast here. You know? My son comes here all the time. And Mishko, he lives here now, you know, so.
Well, you said before the interview you're going to plan to come here once or, once a month.
No, I have to take care of my restaurant.
Yeah. You know? Respect that.
Get a resident here or something.
Danny, thank you so much.
God bless you. Thank you, man. It's been a pleasure.
That was pretty cool, huh? Some people just have a way about them. Whatever they're doing, wherever they might be, they're effective. And you look at Danny Trejo, he fits that mold. He certainly does. Prison boxing champion, navigating some of those prisons like San Quentin, a notorious prison. He then, after that life, finds success as drug counselor. Those good deeds, paid on God's time, as he said. I like that. And then the world of acting, opposite De Niro, Charles Bronson, leading movies in his own right, and now has his own restaurant chain. What a story. And he has this charm, doesn't he, that I guess is underlined with an authentic realness. And he can say almost anything, but he seems to have this ability to get away with it. It's a rare talent, I'll give you that. And giving back, that was a big feature of the interview. After that prison riot, he thinks, if I carry on, I'm going to end up dead. And he turns his life around, that redemption arc. And he's been giving back ever since. And for us as film and TV lovers, we've been a part of that, which is a joy. Big thank you to Danny Trejo. If you fancy some tacos, go down to Portobello Road. It's in Notting Hill. I've heard the fish tacos are pretty good. Check it out. Big thank you to Danny. And next week, star of Two and a Half Men and Yellow Jackets, Melanie Lynskey, who will be quickly stopping by to talk about her new Sky original series, The Tattooist of Auschwitz, where she stars opposite Harvey Keitel. Looking forward to that. And until then, ciao, guys.